This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. Even though it's kind of felt like November in Boston all this week, summer is right around the corner, and that means it's time for...
Camp!
Hello, Mara. Hello, Father. Here I am at Camp Granada.
Well, New England was the birthplace of the American summer camp movement in the late 19th century, and to this day, many parents in northeastern cities still send their children to while away a few weeks on isolated lakesides in New Hampshire or Vermont.
Actually, not as many as you might think, according to our next guest. Arlington psychologist Michael Thompson says parents are getting more and more anxious about sending their kids away, and that's depriving a whole generation of some crucial developmental experiences. His new book is called Homesick and Happy: How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Michael Thompson, welcome.
Thank you, Adam. I'm delighted to be here.
Explain the kind of work that you do and how you started to notice this phenomenon.
I've been a consultant to schools, both public and private, for over 30 years, and I began to get calls from administrators saying, our parents are nervous about the sixth grade or two-night overnight trip to New York. They're very afraid. And there are parents who won't send their kids on the fifth grade overnight science trip to Rhode Island. Or they'll only send their child if they can be a chaperone and go with the child.
To say nothing of sending them to the wilderness for 4 weeks.
Yeah. No, if you can't send them away for a night or two, your chances of being able to send them away for 4 weeks are very small.
You have a list of 8 things that children cannot achieve in the company of their parents, or things that parents cannot do for their children. What are some of them?
Oh, you went to the most negative part of my book. Yeah, I have to. Adam, look, this is the most conscientious parenting generation ever. They read more, bless them. They buy more parenting books, bless them. They're also more anxious and conscientious. And after they've been so on the job, they think that they're always adding value. I'm always here for you, sweetie. So when I was in a local town around here, I won't name it, I said, you know, you're not always adding value to your child's experience by watching their town soccer games. This mother said to me, but we've always gone to our daughter's soccer games. I said, well, yeah, but you're not always adding value. She said, but we've always done it, as if to stop would be a betrayal. And I said, you know, when your daughter plays soccer, it's her teammates, the competition, other things. If you're in the side lane, she has to watch how you're experiencing her or wonder, think about whether you thought she played well. It's kind of a relief to not have you there. And this mom got totally bent out of shape.
Oh, man.
At the idea that she wasn't, because she thought she was being a wonderful parent. Finally, I said, is there a young woman in the audience who played sports? And I had a woman in her late 20s say, I always kind of liked it when my parents weren't there. And, you know, if we remember back to the sweetest moments of our childhood, and I'd love it if your listeners thought about that, the sweetest moments of your childhood, 80% of people tell me, are when you're away from your parents, doing something that's developmentally challenging with friends, maybe a little risky, right?
Right.
And only 20% of people's sweetest memories, I've probably asked 10,000 people this in audiences.
Yeah, I suppose I remember, you know, tramping around, like, construction sites with nail guns and stuff, you know? Like, totally dangerous, hazardous stuff.
I rest my case.
Yeah.
You were how old?
Oh, I mean, I'm, you know, I grew up out in the woods, fortunately. And
yeah.
So, I mean, really, age of 8, 9, 10, frankly, earlier, you know, we would just, the parents would just stick us out the door and we'd go find trouble.
Well, the loss of free play in the neighborhood, unsupervised play, is the single biggest loss in American childhood in the last 20 years. And camp is one of the last places you can go and just be with other kids and have adventures. And you're being watched, actually, by big kids. Parents are concerned. Does the camp director know his or her business? Will they be supervising my child? But the truth is, at camp, you're being supervised by 17, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds.
And that's a very rare chance for 10-year-olds to interact with kids of that age.
Nowhere in that we're such an age-segregated society, and schools are so age-segregated. The last place in America an 11-year-old can spend a lot of time with a 19-year-old is summer camp, and love that 19-year-old and have the 19-year-old really pour her heart and soul and energy and creativity into that 11-year-old.
So what are some of these specific things that you think children can only achieve on their own in an environment like a sleepaway camp.
All right, so you're getting me back to 8 points of what parents can't do. You cannot make your children happy. You cannot give them high self-esteem. I mean, it's good to have a loving childhood, but if you... We've all known parents are constantly trying to make their children happy, and their children turn into whiny manipulators, right?
Yeah.
And if you try and give your child self-esteem, you're misguided. Self-esteem comes from facing a challenge and mastering it, a developmentally appropriate challenge. Well, that's practically the definition of camp.
Well, we're going to talk more about what you think is special about camp. I want to mention that we're speaking with psychologist Michael Thompson about his new book called Homesick and Happy. Listeners, we can take some calls. I'm curious, are you nervous about sending your kids away? Did you go to sleepaway camp when you were little? What are your memories? How did those experiences shape the person that you are today, if at all? Do you buy Michael Thompson's notion that parents cannot give their children self-esteem or make them happy or independent, that they must achieve these things on their own? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. You open your book with a great scene at a camp on Lake Champlain.
Oh, I know. It's kind of a mini camp run for some kids and the three counselors in their 30s, and I'm going to name them here, Matt and Ben and Neil, curse them, said to me, we're going to have a kind of an initiation for these boys. The boys were off sitting in the woods in the dark.
And to be clear, this is you're researching your book at this camp.
Oh, I was doing I was there as a writer and a psychologist, and let me announce I'm 65 years old. This was the 30th of October on the edge of Lake Champlain, and these guys in their 30s said, you know, we're going to have an initiation for the boys, which is jumping in the water. The temperatures were, it was in the high 30s and the water was in the 50s. And they said, if you're going to stay, we want everybody to participate. You can go back to the inn and have a drink, but are you going to stay or go? And so I was kind of up against it. And here are these counselors, and I tried to wiggle out of it. And one of these counselors just stuck it to me. Here's the challenge, Michael. Are you going to do it? So I ended up putting on a suit and jumping in the water with everybody else.
But they had this wonderful little rite that they put the kids through, forcing them to sort of decide and commit to jumping in this freezing cold
water.
That's
right. The boys had to commit to stepping over a line and accepting the challenge and the test.
A literal line in the dirt.
A guy took a stick. Matt took a stick and made a line in the dirt. And the boys had to step over it. I had to step over it, not knowing what the challenge would be. Sight unseen, you had to say, all right, I'm going to do it.
So developmentally, what does that give a kid?
It's a challenge. You know it's going to be a challenge. You've got to trust people that they're not going to overwhelm you with anxiety. But you know they've picked something that is going to tax you a bit. It's going to stress you a bit. And on the other side, the promise is that you'll feel great. I tell you, 10 minutes after we crossed that line, we were all standing around a fire with the heat on our... We were freezing. The heat on our chests and faces, absolutely exuberant, absolutely triumphant. And when kids do those things away from their parents, and they think, I did it, my achievement, my parents weren't watching, I accepted the challenge on my own, it was me.
Let's take some calls. Andy is calling from Newton.
Hi. I want to just thank you for addressing this issue. I attended summer camp for 9 years in Maine as a child. It was an all-girls camp. It was the absolutely defining event of my life. I was a very shy, awkward kid at home. I didn't have a lot of friends, and I was pretty lonely and sad a lot of the time. And at camp, I was a completely different person. I was able to reinvent myself, and I became confident. I, 1 year, had the lead in the camp play. I was a captain of my team during our version of Color War. And it was funny, because every year at the end of the summer, I would hope that these positive experiences would carry over into what I thought of as regular life, and they didn't. But over time, I think the confidence I gained and the security I developed and the real sense of self-worth that I earned at camp did, in fact, inform the person that I ultimately became, which is a confident, secure, polished individual. So camp did so much for me.
But it built up slowly over the summers, little accretions every summer, Andy?
Absolutely. It was a cumulative thing where, I just built on that. And they really, and I really internalized, even though it didn't have an immediate benefit, I absolutely internalized those experiences. And as I said, in the aggregate, over time, they certainly helped me develop and grow. And I was so happy at camp.
Andy, can I ask a question? You said you were shy. Did that also mean you were a little anxious and maybe a little homesick at the start?
I was not the least bit homesick.
Not at all.
Well, okay, here, can I weigh in here?
Please.
So I went to, like, Boy Scout camp when I was a little kid, you know, and I was just sort of a soft suburban kid, sort of really anxious about being, you know, unathletic and pudgy and not, you know, being able to make friends all that easily. And I was really unhappy. I really, really was. So what do you do if a kid gets despondently homesick or anxious and he's, you know, on the phone with you? I mean, you write about a poor kid in your book who was so racked he was soiling himself.
Well, that boy was sent to camp by parents who were sending him to the wrong camp. Mm. He should have been in a therapeutic camp. He wasn't soiling himself because he was at camp. He had a history of soiling. That's a slightly different story. And his counselors worked heroically to make a successful experience. But I, as the psychologist, had to say, you know, needs to be a therapeutic camp. No, I when I started doing this, I had the conventional notion about homesickness, which I think everybody has. Most kids are homesick, and then they get over it in 3 or 4 days by getting diverted or engaged or making a friend. What I learned when I went to the research is that there is a body of research on homesickness done by a psychologist and his colleagues from YMCA Camp Belknap in New Hampshire. And his name is Chris Thurber, and he's the psychologist for Phillips Exeter Academy. And he wanted to be a psychologist doing research, but he also wanted to go to his camp, so he combined the two. He found that homesickness, milder serious, is almost universal. About 81% of kids have that get over it in 3 or 4 days. A milder version. About 19% of kids have significant distress at some points. And then there's a band of 6% of kids, 6 out of 100 kids, who have really unremitting homesickness of the kind you describe, Adam. And when I read this research, I went back to my son, Will, whom I pushed out the door to go to camp when he was 13. I thought it was a little late. I knew he was a kind of a nervous guy, and my wife had never gone to camp, so she wasn't absolutely behind it. Our daughter had loved going away, so she went. But my son, I needed a push. So I went to him when he's a college student, and I was writing this book. I said, Will, were you homesick a lot that first year at camp? He said, every day, Dad. I said, every day it never lifted? He said, not till the last 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
And I said, I knew he had been that 6% group.
Yeah.
I said, but why'd you go back for a second year, Will? And he said, you wanted me to, Dad. And I said, but you didn't fight me. Why didn't you give me a bigger fight? He said, Dad, if you can't learn to sleep away from your parents, it means you have to live at home for the rest of your life.
There's a developmental leap right there.
No kidding.
Well done. Tammy is calling from Newton. Tammy, you were a camp counselor? We've lost Tammy. Let's go to Oboe in Townsend.
Good afternoon. I think this is great. I'm a big supporter of camps. I've been working in camps for almost 20 years now, and I have seen homesick kids be successful. My question today, though, is as I listen to these anecdotes about swimming in the cold water, we are such a hyper-focused society on safety and all this talk of hazing and what is appropriate and abuse. Lots of programs now are 1 week, 2 weeks maximum. Are we able to create conditions for these kids to learn these skills when we've got such a hyper-focused eye on making sure that everything is safe and soft and unrisky?
It's a great question, Oboe. And I think that camps are doing it. I visited camps in North Carolina which have mountain boarding and caving. I myself am the consultant to a camp in Northern Ontario, and the oldest kids, boys and girls, make a journey of many hundreds of miles to Hudson's Bay, paddling canoes through the wilderness, the deepest northern wilderness in Canada. They have to be prepared. They have to get skills. They now have satellite phones. But it's not without risk. But that's part of what makes it a passage for both boys and girls. I have done something away from home that was strenuous, that demanded the best of me, that demanded teamwork. I had to put up with other kids because I'm with them for weeks. This trip to Hudson's Bay is a 7-week trip. And everybody annoys everybody. Everybody has to cook for everybody. Everybody has to pull their weight. And I see, Adam admitted being a soft suburban kid. I was a soft New York City kid when I went off to camp. And some of the most meaningful experiences had to do with my not being so comfortable.
Yeah. Well, in contrast to that traditional outdoor summer camp experience, I feel like there's a lot of kids these days going to things like skills camps, you know, soccer camp, Mandarin Chinese camp or band camp or whatever. But you say in your book that that kind of doesn't count. Why not?
Well, I'm going to out your producer, Jessica, because she and I were talking about this when she was recruiting me for the show. And she said, I think I went to camp, but I don't think I went to real camp. I said, what do you mean? She said, I went to music camp. I said, which one?
Interlaken.
She said, yes. And all I did was play the violin. I said, all right, but did you have time in the evening? Did you have campfires? Were you living in cabins with people, having to get along with a group? Yes, yes, yes. I said, did you make bonds, close bonds with other kids? Yes. It was dominated by the violin, to be sure. But she had a camp experience. Now, she's carrying this burden of thinking she missed out on the real fun of camp. But she had the being away, mastering that, and getting to know new kids. You have to come up to speed very fast. It's hard.
So what kind of camp experiences wouldn't you classify as being valuable in that regard?
Some of these skill camps are so skill-focused that they're kind of like school. They're preparing for school. We'll teach you the skills that'll impress your varsity baseball coach or your varsity coach. And there isn't really true activity that's community building or character building. I was talking to a doctor at the University of Michigan. He consults to the summer camps on the campus there. And he said, we run a ton of summer programs, mostly athletics. He said about 50% of them are real camps.
I see.
Now, that's kind of insider talk, but I knew exactly what he meant.
Yeah.
The camps that really grab your soul and pull you into community, that's a camp experience, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's try to sneak in one more call. Ruth is calling from Westwood.
Hi.
Hi, Ruth.
I went to camp for several years when I was growing up, and I also became a counselor. And I worked in a camp where the oldest kids in the camp lived across the lake from the rest of the camp and did some pioneering skills. We lived in tents, a co-ed group of boys and girls who were separated at night. But talk about teamwork. And my daughter, who went to the very same camp that I went to, there was nothing like it. And she had the exact same wonderful experience that I had. The thing that I liked the most about camp, another caller was saying that she was very shy and reserved at home, but at camp she reinvented herself. I think it's almost the opposite. I think that you're your authentic self at camp because you're living closely with a group of other kids the same age. You cannot keep up the facade that you may have developed for yourself in school. And so what happens is after a few days, everybody is their truly authentic, good self, and there's no competition over makeup and hair and clothing because you have to be who you are or you just can't get by. And everybody is very accepting of just who you are.
Appreciate the call, Ruth. Final thought from you.
Ruth, so many kids I interviewed said you can really be who you are. I mean, these are 9 and 10 and 11-year-old kids. And the girls said, it's great that you don't have to shower all the time and you can look like a mess. It was such a relief to kids. But I think you've captured something that's true about camp.
And I should just say that, you know, I had sort of a bad Boy Scout camp experience. But then when I was, I think, 15, I went to a kind of a summer music camp thing. And that was really the summer where I remember sort of becoming myself.
Yes.
And I wouldn't trade that for anything.
And my son Will went to an arts camp that had a radio station. Adam, you could have gone there.
That's right. Michael Thompson is a psychologist and consultant to schools. His new book is called Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. We have an excerpt at RadioBoston.org. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you, Adam.
Well, stay with us. Up next, ideas for your weekend, plus our Farm to Fork series takes you to an oyster lab in Duxbury. Stay with us. I'm Adam Ragusea with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.